Lesson tape number two with Alice. First, I'm going to give you the tuning of your violin. For the rank beginners, your G string is way to the left of your violin as you hold it under your chin on the left-hand side. I'll give you the tune of the G string. Now the D string.
Alice Clemens is and always has been a teacher. Her house in the rural Tug Hill region of New York State is stuffed full of musical mementos from students and friends. Plaques and ribbons from fiddling contests line her walls. Stacks of sheet music stand on and around the upright piano. Record albums and cassettes produced by old-time fiddlers like Don Messer and Graham Townsend are piled near a turntable. Like the more celebrated Pete Seeger, Alice's life revolves around playing and promoting old-time music. In her case, that means the fiddle.
When I was a young girl, I wanted to get a fiddle into my hand. I'd heard Uncle Art play the fiddle, and I thought that music was grand. I owe a great deal to this country and to the friends I've made since the start. And I'll do my best while I'm living to bring music into your heart. Yes, I put my whole life in my fiddle and into the joy that it brings. I made it my way of living. It's God's blessing on four strings.
Welcome to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, your host for this series of conversations with traditional artists from the northern region of New York State, the North Country. Each individual or community group in the series has been acknowledged as masters of their art by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, an organization dedicated to the preservation and presentation of local folk culture. All these artists have been honored with the North Country Heritage Award and are well-known institutions in their own corners of the region, admired and respected for who they are and what they do.
Yes, I put my hope in my fiddle and into the joy that it brings. I made it my way of living. It's God's blessing on four strings.
In 1974, Alice and a small group of old-time fiddlers gathered for a picnic and to swap tunes. Alarmed at the lack of published music, the group decided to organize the New York State Old Time Fiddlers Association.
To perpetuate, to preserve, and to promote old time fiddling. We do the promotion by having concerts up here where people can hear the music and then want to play. And we get a lot of new fiddlers that way. You'd be surprised how many new fiddlers there are. And to perpetuate it is to keep it going for years to come, to keep our traditional music going. We are traditional. New York State Fiddlers Association is traditional. And most of our fiddlers play traditional music. Of course, a lot of them play progressive music. You know, you've got to get a little progressive in there in order to please your audience. So we promote it, we perpetuate it, and we preserve it. We're preserving the music. We've got a lot of books up there and a lot of recordings that fiddlers have actually recorded, and that's what our purpose is.
Since fiddling has always been very popular in nearby Ontario and Quebec, several Canadians soon joined the young group. To acknowledge the importance of major influences in their music, the association began looking for ways to honor old-time fiddlers. Within a couple of years, they decided to create the North American Fiddlers Hall of Fame. A large old farmhouse near Alice Clemens' home and the site of their annual picnics at the Cedar Pines campground was acquired. Each year, members are chosen in two categories, New York State and International. In 1976, Alice was inducted into the new hall by her peers.
I'm not the best at all. And I was in the first group that was put in. To start it off with, we put in 3 international and 3 New York. And it was a popularity contest, and most people knew me, so I got voted for. But they did do me the honor last year of putting me into the International Fiddlers Hall of Fame, too. So, and that's elected by the international members of the Hall of Fame already. So I thought that was quite a thrill. I was real pleased to get that. Not that I deserve it with my playing, but I've tried to do a lot for fiddling. And, I've started ever so many people on the fiddle. I can't begin to tell you how many. Heck, way back when I was 7 years old and played my first couple of tunes, my uncles wanted me to teach them how to play them. So I started in way, way early helping people play the violin.
Alice's contributions to old-time fiddling center on teaching. Over the last 50 years, she has taught scores of people many of the hundreds of old tunes in her repertoire and important fundamentals of music theory.
I like music. I like to be able to read music. I don't read awfully fast, but I like to be able to read music, and I like my students to read music. I've got a little girl right now that she's coming fine, but she won't read music. But she can play anything I play right after me, so. But it's too easy for her, see. And I'm just debating how to get her to read music. Because if she can't, she'll be crippled. You know, if you can't read music, how are you going to pick up a brand new tune? Somebody says, well, I like Larry O'Gaff, and you look through a book for Larry O'Gaff, see if you can learn to play it. Well, how can you play it if you can't read music? You can't always get to somebody who plays Larry O'Gaff to listen to him.
Because she was a frequently sought teacher, Alice came up with a way to be in more than one place at a time. Her teaching tapes reiterated concepts from personal lessons and helped aspiring fiddlers learn their way through tunes new to them.
Now, the next tune I'm going to do on lesson tape number 2 is Golden Slippers. Golden Slippers is in the key of G. It has an F sharp in the key of G. I'm going to go very quickly over the scales. If you have my basic tape, you can get your scales from that. But I'll open G, first finger on G, second finger on G, third is C, open D, first finger is E, F sharp, with your G, your third finger right close to your second. Open A, first finger on A, your second finger on A right close to the first. Then a long space, and your third finger is D. Then your open E, first finger on E, with your second right close to the first. Now that'll be your finger position for Golden Slippers. In Golden Slippers, we start with 2 notes on an up bow. Third finger on D and open A. And then first finger on A, first, open, third on D, open A, first on A, first. Third on D, open A, first on D, A, first on A, second, first, open.
It's rather catty to do, I'll tell you why, because you can't play it too slow or they don't get the tune, see, as they're going. Well, I'll do it that way once, then I play it real slow for them, and then I play it up to speed for them. And you'd be surprised if people have learned off of my tapes.
Among the reasons Alice has tried to make fiddle lessons so accessible may be her own memories of wanting to learn. Although she grew up in Syracuse, annual visits to her Tug Hill relatives introduced her to music making.
Well, my grandfather's family, his brothers and sisters, had an orchestra, and they played at different areas, and then a cousin of his had another orchestra. They were playing for Dance in Redfield upstairs in Bennett's garage, and my folks took me to that dance, and I was just a little girl, but I sat on the step that led up to the band platform, and I sat there all night long and just listened to music, and that's where I first started wanting to play the violin when I was 3. When I was 7, There was a man giving lessons over at the high school. Now, I went to Park Hill School, which was quite a ways from the high school. But just after school at night, on Tuesday nights, he gave lessons. And so I started going to the high school and sitting in the high school while he was giving lessons. And finally, he wondered why I was there. He said, "Little girl, why are you here? You're always here and you're always alone. But every time I give lessons, you're here." I said, "Well, I'm watching everything you do so that when I get a violin, I can play." So that was my first experience. And then Mr. Hartman said, "Well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I've got a book and I've got a little violin. And I'll bring them next week. If you can get 50 cents for a lesson, I'll give you a lesson next Tuesday." Well, I went home, and of course, I didn't dare ask for 50 cents. That was a half a day's wages. That was a lot of money back in those days. And so I teased and teased for 50 cents.
Alice's persistence paid off. Her father finally agreed to pay for lessons and for the book from Mr. Hartman. When he looked through the book, he recognized one song and offered Alice a challenge.
He said, "I'll tell you what, if you can play Yankee Doodle in 3 weeks, we'll give you lessons." So when I went back to poor Mr. Hartman the next week, we spent the whole lesson turning from the first page where you learn the open strings, you know, and how to draw the bow and everything. We turned from that over to Yankee Doodle, and then back to the beginning, and then back to Yankee Doodle. I said, "I've got to play Yankee Doodle. I've got to play Yankee Doodle." But at the end of 3 weeks, I could play it by ear enough so that my father was going to let me have lessons. But at the end of 3 weeks, Mr. Hartman wanted to walk home with me. And he told my folks that he was just too old a man. He was 82 years old, and he had to come all the way up to Syracuse on the trolley and go to the high school and teach after school, and then it would be dark by the time he went home. And he was 82, and it was just too much for him. But he said that if he ever saw a child that needed lessons, it was me. So he sold my mother the violin for $2.50 and threw in the book.
Three lessons and 2 years passed.
Then a man started giving lessons cross lots from our house, across the back lot, over to Bramer's house. And his name is Mr. Peters. And he was a musician from Syracuse also. And I've heard quite a lot about him afterwards, you know, when I found out more about him. And I took lessons from him. I had 19 lessons from him. And I went again to Bramer's house and was sitting there listening to everything he had to say, and he got curious about me. And so I told him I had a violin and I was learning to play it. Well, he wanted to hear me. So I bought the violin over the next week, and he wanted to hear what I could do. So I did whatever I could do, and I could play the Irish Washerwoman and a few tunes like that. And then he said, "Yes, I'll give you lessons, but I want to give them at your house. I don't want to give them over here." And so he came to my house, and actually he was a wonderful, wonderful teacher. He was a wonderful teacher. And I learned an awful lot from him in those 19 lessons. My father gave him a handmade rowboat to pay him for the lessons. And they became very good friends. And Mr. Peters would eat his supper over there every night that he gave me lessons. He'd eat his supper over there. And we became very good friends.
You're listening to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, and this week's program is about traditional fiddler Alice Clemens. For many rural families a half century ago, music was an important part of almost any social gathering. Once each summer, Alice's relatives would bring plenty of food and musical instruments to a reunion in one of their large old farmhouses.
Our reunions were just filled with entertainment and music, and quake games, horseshoes, you probably call them, and ball game, and we had the whole schmear when we had a reunion. But always in the parlor, there was music. And if it was a nice day outdoors, we opened up the parlor door and used the door as a stage, kind of. And people used to sit outside and listen to the music. And yes, every time anybody came, we always had music. At my grandmother's, not my own home, my grandmother's. And Oh, just whenever you went to visit anybody. They always said, bring your fiddle.
By her teenage years in the 1930s, Alice was playing her fiddle in public often. Grange halls, dance halls, and small bars became the new scenes for music and dancing in Tug Hill and beyond.
I didn't play for dances very early. I did when I was a teenager some. I go down to the Wagon Wheel in Plaszky, and there was a good fiddler down there, and he always asked me to get up and play. And I used to get up and play with him, and I played some over to Kosoge Park. Ellis Riley played over there for a while, and he'd always ask me to get up and play. But the first money I ever made with the violin was at house parties. When I lived up to my grandmother Cowles, I was up there every summer, all summer long. We used to go to different places to house parties. Somebody just decided to have a dance, and they'd say, I'm going to have a dance in my house Saturday night. And everybody would tell everybody that there was going to be a dance here on Saturday night. And I've heard some great stories about house parties. One night, Bill Powers was telling me he was playing for a house party and the floor went through. You know, everybody was stomping on the floor and the floor fell through. And they went down cellar and fixed up, shored up the floor and went back to dancing. We'd earn about $5. That'd be $2.50 apiece. And we thought we were rich. I'll tell you, well, $2.50 would buy a lot then. You'd buy pencils and paper and nylon stockings and a lot with $2.50.
Traditional country dance musicians had to know many different tunes to satisfy their friends and neighbors. Some old-time fiddlers prided themselves that they could play for a long night of dancing without playing the same tune twice. Experienced dancers and musicians performed quite a variety of steps and tempos.
Jigs, reels, hornpipes, and breakdowns, you might call them, that are real fast. But I like jigs particularly well. I love to watch anybody jig, and I love to play jigs. I find them very interesting. Now, when I used to play for dances, we played a waltz or a slow, a medium song for the beginning song of a round dance, and then the next one would be real slow, and then the next one would be fast, and then sometimes you put in a polka. So sometimes you played four, and when you played for square dance, you played a set of three dances. And that also was a mediocre one, not too fast, too slow, then kind of a slow one, and then a fast one.
Quite often, old-time musicians like Alice not only played tunes for the dancers, but also directed them through an elaborate progression of steps. This was known as calling a dance, and the calls took several forms.
Well, a command call, like you play the violin, and one that I think of is Duck and Dive for the Ocean Wave. And you say, First Lady, go up to the right, circle four, right and left through. And you right and left, right through with your couple, with a couple on the other side. So there's three couples right and left. And then they go on to the next, and then you right and left through. And on to the last, and right and left through. Now, that is a command call. Whereas a singing call, you call it, now the first two ladies cross over by the opposite gentleman's stand. See, you keep the tune with your voice. In fact, a lot of callers today do that without having a lead instrument with them. But it's nicer when you got a fiddle.
Nail element left in the corners, all right in your honey, right around the hall with your right foot up and your left foot down. Walk right around, boys, walk right around. Sergeant, get ready now. Nail it, your lady, by the hair. Go round that lady over there. Back to the center with a hoe again. Round that gent from Tennessee. Circle four, four hands round. Circle four, four hands round. Your right foot up and your left foot down. Nail it, that lady, by the hair.
Some of the calls are very old, as are the tunes and dance steps. Square dancing, based on the traditional country French quadrille, was very familiar to the older generations of dancers that Alice knew as a child.
Well, they stand in a square, two people on each side of a square, and there's eight in all. And uh, the first couple leads off to the right, and then they'll dance with that couple, and then they go on to the next, and sometimes they pick them up, and sometimes they leave them there. And now Pistol Packin' Mama is a very active call, and it's rather modern. I say rather modern. I've called it for 50 years, but it's still a modern call to the old calls. First couple lead to the right and circle four hands round. Swing the opposite lady, swing your feet right off the ground. Push your way for a little bitty while. Pull her right back and see her smile. Push your way, and like that. And it's kind of, you kind of jitterbug when you push her away. So that's only about 55 years old, I'd say.
For Alice's generation, modern meant the radio. Many rural people felt connected to other places by listening to news and entertainment broadcasts. From the maritime provinces of Canada to the Appalachian region of the U.S., the airways introduced fiddling styles and tunes to upstate New York audiences.
There's a lot of them. But I imagine probably Donna Messer has affected most Americans playing more than anybody else has, because he put out books and he played on the radio so many, many years. And so many fiddlers have told me, boy, I turned on the radio every time. When I was a young woman, first starting, you know, my housekeeping, there used to be a program, and it came on at 1:30 in the afternoon, and it was a Henry Ford program. And he always had the Henry Ford Fiddler and a Dulcimer on it. And boy, if that wasn't beautiful music. Now, I'm not talking about the mountain dulcimer. I'm talking about the hammered dulcimer. And if that wasn't beautiful music, everything stopped at my house from 1:30 to 2:30 while I listened to that program. You know, it was like your modern-day soap operas.
In the 1920s, when Alice was first learning to play, it was quite rare that a woman would play the fiddle, especially for dances in public places. Certain rules of behavior were expected of her, which she didn't particularly appreciate.
I was told I wasn't supposed to stand up when I played. I was supposed to sit down, because all ladies sat down when they played. And, of course, I was in the habit of standing up. I like to stand up to play because your whole body's looser. You know, you're just like a person out pitching for a baseball game. If you're not relaxed and balanced, you can't play a good violin. You never saw anybody really good play a violin that slumped all over and held the violin down here. You have to have a stance, a position, a stance. And you get that much better standing up with your left leg ahead of your right leg. You get that position a lot better by standing with a good stance. And so I like to stand up and play, and one of my callers said, I wish you'd sit down like a lady. So really, fiddling is a man's world, but not so much anymore. They're finding out that women can make finer, sweeter tones on a fiddle than what most men can make.
By the 1960s, fiddling contests became popular ways to promote and conserve the old tunes. In addition, a revival of interest in the instrument by a whole new generation of musicians who had not grown up with traditional music and dancing helped fiddling flourish once again. Alice joined in, but she still felt some discrimination as a woman.
When I first started playing, a woman couldn't win a contest. The first one I remember, Maureen Riley, she was a violinist fiddler, and her father had been a fiddler before her, but she had taken lessons and was very, very good at it. And she played the best in the contest, and she got the award. And, oh, the men were mad, I'll tell you. Oh. Someone said because she wore a tight sweater, and she wore a great big loose sweater. It wasn't tight at all, but that's what it was said about her. And they had all sorts of reasons why a woman won. And the thing my husband hated the most was when somebody would say, she does awfully well for a woman. For a woman. Instead of said, she's a real good fiddler. She does awfully well for a woman. Oh, that'd make him see red.
Despite the challenges, Alice has remained dedicated to old-time fiddling and country dancing. It has been a lifelong commitment, which she has always taken very seriously.
Right from the time I was 7 years old when I first got a fiddle, every time anybody come, my mother would say, well, why don't you play the violin for them? And I probably sounded squeaky and rusty and everything else, but my folks were proud of me, and so I played. Because I made a covenant with God before I got a violin. And I made it about the fiddle. I knew that the rainbow was a covenant with the Lord to Noah that he'd never destroy the earth with water again. And I used to go to Sunday school every Sunday, and I made a covenant with God that if he would help me get a violin and help me learn how to play, that I wouldn't refuse to play for anybody unless I absolutely had to. And I've tried to keep that covenant.
When I am sad and I'm lonely and everything goes the wrong way, I reach down and pick up my fiddle, and it turns the dark night into day. When I am old and I'm feeble, and my fiddle I've laid down to rest, I know I'll find peace and contentment in knowing my life has been blessed. Yes, I put my whole life in my fiddle and into the joy that it brings. I made it my way of living. Is God blessing on four strings?
That was traditional upstate New York fiddler and old-time dance musician Alice Clemens. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, and you have been listening to Meet the Masters, Conversations with Traditional North Country Artists. The series is produced by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York. This program was written and produced by Varick Chittenden and Lamar Bliss. The interviews were conducted by Jamie Marrera, with audio engineering by Lamar Bliss in the studios of North Country Public Radio, Canton, New York. The series is supported by a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund Community Folklife Program, administered by the Fund for Folk Culture and underwritten by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Research and field recordings were supported by the Sweetgrass Foundation.